and we can ride the boogie.
Share that beat of love.
I wanna rock with you
all night.
Dance you in the
sunlight.
I wanna rock with you
all night.
I'm gonna rock the night away. Right.
Wow, all right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Wednesday already. That means Wednesdays with none other than Maggie Dawn, the Dawn of Resistance herself, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. What's going on, Maggie?
Good morning, Earl. It's so nice to be here with you. Been listening since you came on the air. Some interesting stuff this morning.
You know, it's those things, especially the first one with the 11-month-old baby. Can you imagine?
How can anybody argue that these people shouldn't be charged? If you lock a child in a car and the child dies, you go to prison. That's the way it should work.
I thought it was cut and dry. Something
that
like
is the way it should work. Also, hey, church, you don't have child care? Like, if you don't want to hear crying babies during services, you should provide child care. It's a church. Most churches do that.
Yes, and you want families with children.
Of course.
In the church, right? I mean...
Of course you do, except maybe you don't. That's a whole nother discussion we could have. And I'll just... You know, why gild the lily? There is an incredible article that came out yesterday in the Washington Post about the explosion of homeschooling amongst especially the far right Christian nationalist movement. And frankly, it's a version of brainwashing, right? Like they raise young women up to obey husbands and fathers, and they employ corporal punishment that in any other circumstance, you know, a black family, if the kid got beat like that, the mom and dad would be hauled in for charges. But I've digressed. Yeah, you would prefer families together in churches, all else being equal. And if a child is having an episode, most churches that I'm familiar with, and I've been to many, many different types of churches. I shouldn't even just say churches. Synagogues,
mosques,
temples.
Right.
Exactly. Provide child care during service, especially if it's 3 hours. You know, I was raised Catholic. We get that business done in 60 minutes,
right.
Or the natives get restless. I shouldn't even use
right.
that phrase anymore, right? Pardon me for saying that. We're always learning and doing better here on the WAUK on civic media. But yeah, you get it done in 60 minutes in a Catholic church or people get angry about it.
Right.
But 3 hours, provide childcare. And I'm sorry, I don't care what you're doing. You're going to prison. You killed your kid.
You know, Maggie.
And what did the police chief call it? Like an unfortunate incident? It's called a crime that you should prosecute.
You know, Maggie, the child was 11 months old. Okay, and you may say, well, what does it matter? Well, listen, it does. In the end, it doesn't matter. But an 11-month-old child
probably can walk.
Yes,
and was basically stuck. Like that is a torture chamber. You tortured your child to death.
Yes, 11 months old is, and that child can think.
Correct.
And I'm not saying that newborn babies, right.
Know that they've been left. Knew it, was in pain, excruciating pain. And y'all don't crack a window? There's so much about this that is just so disturbing.
But Maggie, it was only 70-some-odd degrees.
That's what I'm saying, crack the window.
So what I'm saying is we know this is not the last time that this is going to happen this year.
Every year, like you said,
right.
People leave their children, and we don't even need to talk about the number of animals that are killed in
right.
exactly the same way.
Right.
It's just once the temperature, first of all, never, ever, ever leave a child or an animal unattended in a locked car with the windows
closed. But why should you have to tell somebody that?
I think, you know, Earl, you said it, but I think you used the word ignorance. And yes, that's clearly part of what's going on. I also think that this is an indicator of a failure of our culture and a failure of our society to understand that we have a lot of folks that don't know how to parent.
Yes.
And you have to have so many people to help a family, especially a young family or a family that's struggling through trauma or inherited trauma or generational trauma. Like, we need to value family. So part of what I mean by that is saying, does this church welcome children in their services? I should hope so. If this church doesn't, do they provide childcare during services? These are the kinds of things that we need as a culture and a society to help families not just survive, but to thrive, break through cycles of trauma, right? Help children achieve higher levels of education and early access to education. We need to feel that my neighbor's child, I also have feeling and care for, right? That there's much more of a cohesive, it takes a village approach to families and children. I think a lot of times, yes, parents are ultimately the ones that are responsible, but we know full well that that's not working well right now. So what do we do? And there's so much of, and we see it all the time. I have so many friends that are teachers, and it's so difficult at this moment. So we tend to vilify teachers, blame the school system, right? Meanwhile, we're busy banning books because that really helps kids. There's a lot of ideas coming out of my mouth because I'm so frustrated by the state of affairs.
You know, Maggie, you hear all the people touting we're homeschooling. Never mind, many of them are not qualified.
So this was part of what, yes.
I don't care what they say. They're not qualified.
And it is virtually unregulated. That is what the Christian nationalist right-wing movement did. They went state by state, led by a few folks. You can check out the article on WAPO. It was published yesterday, excuse me. They basically deregulated homeschooling. Back in the day when we were in school, if you wanted to homeschool, there was a set curriculum. You had to turn in teaching plans in order to do the homeschooling. That has basically been wiped out state by state, nationwide.
So Maggie,
now there's no standards.
So if people really gave this some thought, I was talking with somebody the other day, and they homeschool. And I said, when the kids are 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, but if you're homeschooling young people at 12, 13, 14 years old, and you've homeschooled them all of the time. Do you have any idea when children don't get a chance to mix with other children, you are really causing a disservice
to the child.
To the child. You don't want your child around other human beings, but you don't understand the impact of your child not being able to
do those things.
Yes.
I really so there's two aspects to me. It's one is they're not able to educationally attain in a really rigorous way. Of course, there are exceptions. Don't call in and be like, well, I knew this one person who's a genius who is homeschooled. Like, that is not the point. The point is the majority of folks. So they're not getting the educational necessities met because the parents do not have the skills and it's virtually unregulated now. And then second of all, they're not being socialized with other children. Conflict resolution, where do those skills begin? Really early on for a kid. If kids aren't reading by third grade, we pretty much know that they are locked into a cycle of underachievement. And we know that the studies that have been done on this, reading and comprehension lag for the majority of homeschooled children. And that, like, if you can't read and comprehend well, the world is closed to you. And you certainly, I mean, I went to Rufus King High School for the College Bound on Olive Street, very proudly, just off of 19th and Capitol in Milwaukee's beautiful inner city Rufus King neighborhood.
It's still beautiful.
Gorgeous place. And all of my teachers were specialists in their area. It wasn't like I had a ninth grade teacher that taught me calculus and literature and biology, right? These were specialized folks that had studied those specific subject matters and how to teach high schoolers about those subject matters. You're not going to do as well at home. Again, I grant you that there are exceptions. But the fact that states have stepped back from regulating this raises a really interesting question to me, Earl. And that is, if we can look at parents who leave a child locked in a closed car in any month of the year, warm or cold, and we can say if the child dies as a result of that, those parents should be criminally prosecuted and should spend some time in prison. If we can draw that line, then shouldn't we be asking questions about where does the parent's right to control the rearing of the child end, and the child's right as a human being to be safe, to have access to good quality education, good quality books, a diversity of opinion, and perhaps even to have that child have some say-so in their religiosity? You know what I'm saying? We seem to be in a point in this country, and the fact that this police chief isn't inclined to prosecute these people at a moment seems to be drawing the line in favor of a parent's absolute right. And we're forgetting that children do also have rights.
You know, Maggie, it's a profound thought about where that begins and where that ends. And it's probably tied into something legal.
It always is, Earl.
Yeah. but clearly, it is really an important question. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Maggie Dawn, the Dawn of Resistance, is in the studio. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Wednesday. That means Wednesdays with Maggie Dawn, Corporate Counsel of Milwaukee County. You know, Maggie, I couldn't help, but, you know, since I have a son that's mentally ill, and as I watch these situations where people who have been diagnosed as mentally ill walk into places and kill a lot of people. The issue we're talking about now is the Tree of Life is a synagogue where a man walked in and slaughtered 11 people. He had been deemed mentally ill even before he did that. And now there's a question of whether or not he should receive the death penalty. And your thoughts, because if a person is mentally ill, what does it mean?
So in a legal context, yes. Yeah. And first, before I forget to say this, I do want to be really clear. I have been fervently opposed to the death penalty for many, many years for a large number of reasons.
It's myself as well.
But primarily two, and one
It has not been equal justice.
Correct. It has been unequally applied to such a drastic degree that one, I think, could make a cogent argument that the death penalty itself as an institution or as an aspect of this system that we use to mete out retribution for crimes is itself racist and extraordinarily regressive. In other words, we punish folks that we more harshly punish black folks and folks that come from extraordinarily difficult circumstances and tend to let those that are white and well-to-do walk away.
Just facts. That's facts.
Just the way the data is.
Right.
Like, you look at the data, them's the facts.
Yep.
I also, secondly, have absolutely no doubt that we have executed innocent people. And thirdly, it's ineffective as a method of deterrence. So the moral justifications, we incarcerate and punish people to deter others from committing crimes, to keep that individual person, if deemed unsafe, away from community. So for safety of community. And then third, it is for retribution. People don't want to talk about that, but that's part of what is baked into this cake. And when you're going to put someone to death, yes, that keeps the community safe because they're no longer walking the planet, but it is not an effective deterrent. And I don't think bloodlust is a really good thing for a system of meeting out purported rights to cure wrongs works very well. You don't teach people not to kill people by killing people. That being said, the law looks at mental illness when it comes to the commission of crimes in a very specific and narrow fashion. And it doesn't ask, does the person have a mental illness? If so, then cannot be held responsible. It asks a very narrowly structured question, narrowly tailored question, and that is, did the person have sufficient understanding of the consequences of their actions? And if it is an intentional homicide, did the person have a sufficient amount of mental capacity to form the requisite intent to commit the crime? In this case, for the Tree of Life Synagogue, I'm not well versed in its facts, but if I recall from when this tragedy first occurred, I believe that the individual had posted a lot of anti-Semitic, Nazi-adjacent things on his social media site. And went out and acquired these weapons. Well, that proves intent. I mean, you can make an argument that those facts prove intent. But when we talk about, first of all, I hate referring to the justice system as a justice system. You could rightly call it an injustice system or, Rich Whitey's way of getting off the hook. I mean, like, there's a lot of different ways to call it. In large part, it's a conflict resolution mechanism. It's just one mechanism that we've chosen. Many other Western democracies have very different versions of what we have here. But there's a fundamental question about, what societal benefit do we get if someone is so seriously mentally compromised that regardless of the answers to those two questions, that they were in whatever way unable to function in society, we didn't, or they were not looked after in some way. There was no safety net for that person. They continue to dissemble in some way and then commit this heinous act. It's the same. It's a different way of asking the same question that I was asking in the last segment, which is, what are the choices that we are making as an American society to either step in and try to provide meaningful safety nets for people that are at highest risk, or in the prior segment, how do we view our responsibilities to each and every child in our country? Or do we just say that's somebody else's problem?
You know, Maggie, when the words that I use by your attorneys in law and all, eloquent words, right?
They're some people very, have some other descriptors for it too,
but,
Earl.
But they're very elegant words and what they stand for is what sometimes confuses many of us. And we think that that's the way law is structured and written. where the average person...
A lot of lawyers
person...
make it indecipherable, right?
Yeah. So, listen, we got to go to break. 844-967-2789. Maggie Dawn, the Dawn of Resistance, is here. I'm glad she's here. We'll be right back. You know... us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Maggie Dawn, the Dawn of Resistance. And Maggie, after this segment, we're gonna let you, because this is the last time you and I are going to be together for a while.
Well, listen, you just, when the next hot topic comes up, Earl, you just give me a little ring-a-dingy. Now come on out to Waukesha and
yeah,
sit with you.
Yeah, and... And so I really am discouraged by what I see is happening in this society. And I've been around long enough now that I've seen this change. Well, there's always been something, but this particular change about people just finding something to make them feel better about themselves. I'm better than somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, better. What makes you better? You're not born better than anybody else. You know, I'm better because in this instance, my hair is longer than yours. Mm-hmm. I'm better because I'm a natural blonde.
Mm-hmm.
I'm better because my hips are better than a person. I'm better because that guy weighs 120 pounds and he's puny, and I'm a 260 pound guy with a big chest, and I'm better. I'm yep. better because I live in a better place than you. I'm better because, you know, my color of my skin. I'm better because my bank account. People have to feel that they're better than somebody else, and that's what's at the root of I'm better because I'm straight. Mm-hmm. And that's what's at the root of all of this is madness. You aren't better than anybody.
Yeah.
None of us are better than anybody. We're born, we die. I don't care how much money you have, you're going to die just like the person without any money. So Maggie, to me, that's we've got to get to a point, and supposedly religion is supposed to be the elixir that gets us to understand that we're not better than anybody else. But that's not the case, is it?
Oh, hell no. Right? One of the things that I often ask people to think about is, how did the birth lottery work for you? Right? How yeah. did the birth lottery sort for you? And would you arrange society any differently if you were, quote, going to lose the birth lottery? Born with a severe disability to a family with, you know, below or at the poverty line.
Right.
Go run out that hypothetical. Is society organized in a good and righteous way, whomever your God is? If your religion teaches you that if you have a lot of stuff, that's because you're good.
Yeah.
And there's a name for this. It's called prosperity theology. And it's the cornerstone of the religious right.
Somebody wants they want our stuff.
And if you're poor, you're poor because yeah. you're bad.
Yeah.
And does anybody hearing some faint tinkling bells of like welfare queens and all?
Yeah.
Then they loaded up all of that. If you got stuff, it's because you're good. If you don't got stuff, it's because you're bad. And oh, by the way, black folks, well, if they don't got, that's because they're lazy, bad, right? There was this perfect intersection of race and wealth politics, right? Because if you're sitting and you're demographically getting smaller and smaller as a group, read white people.
Yeah.
And you're sitting on an inordinately large pile of the stuff. You got to come up with some reason why the greater majority of people aren't getting more stuff, right? It's about keeping my stuff.
Yeah.
So they came up with a religious line of rationale to justify keeping all the stuff. It's really sad. Now, I think that, you know, culture issues have been used since the end of World War II by the conservative movement to try to distract people from the wealth extraction. Distraction to keep people from noticing the wealth extraction. I think that's it. I got to use that again. Because since that period of time, we've watched wealth inequality in this country grow. And now it's growing at rates that we basically haven't ever seen before. And that becomes a really troubling set of facts. And what are people worried about? Who's buying Bud Light? Whether Target's got, you know, a rainbow onesie for babies. Hey, if you're not trans and you don't care about the LGBTQ community and you're a religious righty, that's great. Just walk past the Pride ad section at Target. You don't need to boycott it. It's like if that programming's not for you, simply turn the channel, right? It just, there's so much distraction going on to keep people from paying attention to what is truly important. And sometimes I do think religion can be used and perverted in a way for these very obvious political purposes. And I think there's a huge swath of the country right now that has sort of been snake charmed into that line of thinking. And it is rooted in the I'm better than you, I'm going to judge you, and anything that you say that it is the least bit challenging to me, I am going to shout down, I'm going to ban that book, I'm going to boycott that Bud Light, I'm going to not show up at the Target, I'm going to tear down the onesies, right? Wait a minute. Is your family doing any better than your parents' family did?
So think about the ignorance in this. If you like Bud Light, and so somebody says, hey, Maggie, we're going to boycott Bud Light. Now, you like Bud Light. That's what you've been drinking. You choose that.
For, like, all of my 25 years of drinking, right?
Yeah.
Love that Bud Light, but now I'm going to not drink the Bud Light?
And that's what's happening, right? Okay, we want to punish Target because Target has a little section over here for LGBTQ or trans. Okay.
It's insane.
So you're going to stop going to Target because the mob says.
Yeah, y'all want to spend your time worrying about that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
listen, I don't really choose how I'm going to spend my time based upon how has-been Kid Rock wants to. And he didn't even shoot. I don't know if you've seen these videos. He didn't even really shoot up the, like, two cases of Bud Light. If you watched that video that he posted on the gram or on TikTok or whatever it was. Literally, someone else blows them up. But, like, I'm not taking my cues from Kid Rock. And by the way, as long as we're on it, hey, Bud Light executives, dear Anheuser-Busch, boy, you missed the boat on that one. Because as soon as the knuckle draggers came out and were starting to get a little anxious about the fact that of the billions of dollars you spend on advertising, there was one trans advocate with like a single TikTok that was like, hey, yeah, Bud Light, cool. You decided to lose your mind over that. Bud Light, what they should have done, and Anheuser-Busch, absolutely doubled down. Yes, we're pro-trans rights. Yes, we love the trans community. Yes, we love the LGBT community. Hey, Pride is coming up. How about Bud Light is the beer of all Pride celebrations? They lose 30% in gross sales. They would have made it up by 50%. People love to drink at Pride. That's a good party. It's coming up this weekend in Milwaukee. I think they should have leaned into it. Yes, we're going to be the beer of love and acceptance, not the beer of fear and intolerance. And if you don't want to drink us at NASCAR anymore, pardon the stereotype, then don't.
So Maggie, so if people don't understand the impact of this way of thinking is having on the future of this nation presently and down the road, shame on them. because this battle is taking place inside of this nation. And yet there are people who are concerned about Russia and China and North Korea and all of these people that are led to believe that these people are coming to get us. No.
Yeah,
it's the people inside of the country
I think
that are going to destroy the country from within with this insanity.
Yeah, I think Matt Flynn references that fascism, his line is something like fascism comes in like little kitty footsteps or something like that. And if you look at our founding fathers, they warn that democracy is basically very loosely kept together and that the greatest threats to democratic values and democracies come from within the country. They're not external. So I don't like to think of things in totally apocalyptic terms because I do see glimmers of hope, and it's mostly coming from young people, right? Young people are more tolerant.
It's always the young people who change things. It's always been
right.
That.
Absolutely right. You look at the kids that survived Parkland and the gun advocacy, the gun control advocacy that they've engaged in. I think young people really will be always our country's clarion call to our better versions of ourselves.
So,
right?
So since we're not afraid, CJ is on the line.
Oh, super. I love
it. So good morning, CJ. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Earl, and good morning, Meg.
Hey, CJ.
I do have some thoughts. Your previous discussion was about children, and I remember the phrase from Hillary Clinton, it takes a village, or the Clintons. Well, now the new phrase is, they're all of our kids. They're all of our kids.
What's wrong? Tell me what's wrong with that, that we have a societal responsibility generally to every single child in this country. Did we lose you, CJ? You there?
He's still there. But
it's maybe he muted his phone. Did you mute your phone, CJ?
But you know, Maggie, here's why that way of thinking that they're not all of our children, because children grow up to be adults. And if you want to see a better society, children don't get to pick their families. I keep telling people, to hold children accountable for the conditions, as you talked about the lottery.
Mm-hmm. Birth lottery.
Children don't get a chance. I've seen children who have great potential, but they're born into an environment that prevents them from seeing and becoming the best that they can possibly be because, well, they're born in the environment that they're born in. What's wrong with a nation that refuses to focus on what's in the best interest of the future of its society?
Right,
that's the children.
We have extraordinarily high infant mortality and maternal mortality rates in this country. It's one of the great
worst stains. Worst in the world.
Yes, for developed democracy. That is terrible. It shows you that we don't care. Childhood hunger, food insecurity, housing insecurity. You look at almost every measure, and we are, if not the worst, among the worst of all Western democracies. So I say to folks that proudly proclaim that they are pro-life, please care about the child after it leaves the woman's vagina. That's, you know, like those lives deserve some protecting too. And I don't mean by school resource officers that tend to criminalize stupid teenage behaviors, right? And it's sad to me that this seems to be a bone of contention. I really wanted to hear what CJ was going to say next. Tell me why we shouldn't have a general societal responsibility to each and every child, that they're well cared for, fed, housed, have access to health care and meaningful education that is not funded by the accident of property tax districts.
So you know what, Maggie? Those who call themselves Christian, that's their doctrine.
Yep.
Right? That's their doctrine.
Yep.
And so you can say it all you can ignore it all you want to. I know that's their doctrine. Got to go to a break. 844 844- 967-2789. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Texas, that same number. Yeah, she's back. The Dawn of Resistance, Maggie Dawn. Let's go to Julie in Franklin. Julie, thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Oh, hi, Earl. I really enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
Conversation, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago when I was in town, I lived in Florida taking care of my mom and dad, and then we talked about Trump a little.
I remember you.
So, and I love to listen to your show because I love to hear, you know, different opinions than my own. So, and we could talk all day because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding between you know, everybody. And Maggie's got some good points. I think the one thing I wanted to address, you were talking about, you know, the young people change things, and I think the young people generation comes into their own, and they see things with a fresh eye, and, you know, maybe not the wisdom and experience of the older generation. And I do think your perspective changes when you have children. I'm not, I think we need to find a balance in this country and in our lives instead of the extremes at one end or the other. And it seems like that's all we tend to talk about are the extremes of a group of people that isn't the majority of Americans today. Mm. And I think maybe going to the point of, like, I started listening to you and you were talking about Target and, you know, and the Bud Light and people boycotting. I think what the and please believe me, nobody listens to Kid Rock.
Shoo!
The clown show. The whitest white of us, the whitest redneck, you know, white trash of us. We're not listening to what Kid Rock has to say about anything other than, you know, play your music and entertain us. That's what I think we forget is we want to go to Target and shop and get our stuff. I don't want Target to tell me how I should think or not think.
But how are they doing that? I really want to understand this. If you are not interested in the LGBTQ community or the upcoming Pride celebration, how is Target telling you what to think simply because they have a small display in their store that is there to sell products to make money for Target shareholders for those that do want to attend that celebration? Why is it not just like, and pardon this analogy,
Christmas or Easter or
Hanukkah or the New York Jets versus the, just walk on by. An advertisement for New York Jets gear or a Hanukkah thing, if that's not your jam, isn't telling you to believe that.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying. I totally agree.
Okay.
I totally agree. I'm not a boycotter. I don't boycott. If somebody doesn't have the same opinion as me or doesn't like the same things as me, I think it's silly. But you're not, I think it's a bigger deal than just that. Accumulation.
Say that again, Julie. I'm sorry.
Okay, let me finish. That's okay. And I'll try to be fast because I know you have other callers. It's an accumulation of the schools, the people, that the government getting involved in restrooms and talking about there is no biological male and female.
You know, Julie.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
So anyway, I think it's all of that. Like they're pushing it in schools, and parents
who's
are like,
the
okay,
they?
We can
who's
teach
the
our
they?
Kids this.
Who is the they? And mm-hmm. what exactly is
whatever
being pushed?
Whatever district you're in, or what? Like,
well, who's on school boards, right? Who's on school boards, and who sets educational standards? People are elected to school boards, and educational standards are set by state departments of education and the federal department of education. Those are largely filled with people who have studied and are experts in education. So, what is the pushing? Like, what exactly is being pushed? Do you think young people are being told that they should be gay? Or what's the bad thing that's being told to the kids?
That's not at all what I'm saying.
Okay.
No. See, this is where it all goes sour. And I think that's not at all, at least I've lived a lot of places. I've lived in a lot of different states. I'm 60 years old. I've been in a lot of different situations. I know a lot of different people from a lot of different cultures and races. And I think where it all goes wrong is it's, where most people who are saying, you don't need to force feed me all this, I need to accept this and I need to accept that there's not male and there's not a difference between male and female.
But I'm challenging, Julie, I'm challenging, and what I'm trying to ask you, and I realize that you don't, that this may be the tension point here. I am challenging the statement that anyone is being force-fed those things. A group of people asking to be permitted to live their lives as they choose is not forcing that on anyone else. Acceptance is, asking for acceptance isn't forcing it on someone else. So what exactly is being forced, and how is it being forced?
But nobody's not accepting them. Once again, you're talking about the extremes. You're talking about a percentage of people who are ignorant and don't think out of their box. And you're saying that all white middle class people, Republican, Catholic, religious, think this way. We don't.
But I'm asking. No. I'm saying that you mentioned that. The reason people are upset about this is that it's being forced on them. And I don't understand that. It's not like, who is doing the forcing? And what is being forced?
Not, do you not know, what's going on around the country?
So,
No.
So,
Julie, wait,
guys, hang on. So, Julie, it's a great conversation with you and Maggie, and we're up against the break. Julie, do you want to hang on and continue the conversation? Maggie, I think it's a very important conversation. It's going well.
I'll hang on, Julie.
You want to hang on, Julie?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
I don't mean to get... I don't.
No, you're fine.
No, it's a great Julie, conversation.
It's
important.
It's a needed conversation, and you guys are doing a great job. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.